Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So we had a long overdue deep dive on Inter. It's coming today. We have a first-time guest that I've been wanting to have on for quite some time, Fulvio Santucci. I have to say I had a great time during the interview. Learned quite a bit, so I think you'll enjoy it. That will be available to all at the end of the podcast. And then we're going to talk a lot about transfers, a lot going on in that neck of the woods. There is some cross between Premier League and Serie A, which is always in the wheelhouse of the podcast. So we'll talk a little bit about that at the top. We'll do some hot transfer topics, and then, of course, do a part of the podcast just for patrons. I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, let's start with Thiago Silva. Now, I did see some places in England linking him to your club, Chelsea. His contract's up with Paris Saint-Germain. He said he wants to see after the Champions League, evaluate a few things. Then yesterday left the door open to potentially returning to PSG. I think he's been quite good in these matches. So let me ask you, Alex, in general, and you can also talk about it with Chelsea specifically, would you sign Thiago Silva on a Bosman if given the opportunity?
Yeah, it's tough for me to not answer this time as a Chelsea fan, because I think it really does matter what your club looks like at the current moment. He might not be as appropriate to some clubs as he is to others. So for Chelsea specifically, they need help in defense. They need leadership in defense. They need somebody to make things more organized in defense. They technically have some talented players, but it really feels like a random assortment of parts, and it got dysfunctional this past season. So they're looking for a long-term option, somebody that could be north of £60 million, whether that's Declan Rice or someone else. That's a longer-term option. And that's harder, obviously, than being offered Thiago Silva on a free and being able to accept that. And apparently he might be willing to diminish some of his wages, etc. So that's a lot easier than signing a big high-profile center back. But, David, we know there are really not that many high-profile center backs anyway. So whether Chelsea get Declan Rice now or in the future windows, getting someone like Thiago Silva immediately, in my opinion, it would be great for them. Yeah, he's on a free. No player's on a free, though. We've debunked that myth many times. But still, you're not paying £60 million to get him. And you're bringing in somebody in Chelsea's case where they contrast the squad greatly. Now, is it a little concerning that Thiago Silva has never played in the Premier League before and he's this old? A little bit. But he has played in the Champions League countless times. He's played with top-level competition. And David, you're right. He's still good. I mean, he's still good. He isn't tested week in, week out in Ligue 1. He has been good in the Champions League when I've watched him lately, and many have watched him lately. But there is something to be said that sometimes these PSG players and Ligue 1 players in general can almost rest up for these Champions League games because they might not be tested too hard in league. But still, I think overall, wherever he goes, he's going to bring some steady play. Steady play. You're not getting Thiago Silva of the Milan days, or really the core PSG days that he was there. And he's been there for a while. People might not realize it's already been a long time he's been at PSG. But I think he's going to bring composure that probably would be contagious. So if it's Chelsea, that's fantastic. But really any team, I think he'll shore things up. I'm not sure he's going to shake people by the collar and tell them to shape up. He's been a leader in his career, but he's not like a Sergio Ramos leader. He's not really, really loud. He often is a leader by example. But at this point, he certainly can lead with his voice and he can lead through passion. But I just think that if any team needs a stopgap, they can't find that next center back, or maybe they just want to see what they have with a couple of their current center backs, but they need to bring in someone in the meantime that could be better to pair with maybe those center backs that they currently have. Maybe those center backs they currently have are younger. Man, a lot of this just sounds like Chelsea, but there must be other clubs in this situation. Then I think Thiago Silva's the guy. I do think he's the guy, because I just could never see, even a Thiago Silva move not working out on the pitch, David, I could never see a Thiago Silva move getting messy or just out of hand. Like, it won't be. It's going to be short term. He's really good in the dressing room. I don't think he'll ever be absolutely horrible, even if he has a bad day on the pitch. He just might not be prime Thiago Silva. So, yeah, I think it would make a lot of sense for Chelsea and any team that's just looking to have a little bit more confidence in the back that can't necessarily change things overnight. So for Chelsea, I'm pro it. I'm definitely in favor of it. I'm not going to campaign every day on Twitter for it, but I definitely am pro the idea. And I have been told there's certainly some legs to it, at least on the Chelsea end. So it intrigues me. It intrigues me. And I think it should intrigue a number of fans depending on their club situation. So, David, that's my answer on how I would like Thiago Silva at Chelsea, or really if I was a lot of different clubs. But let's get more realistic. Where do you think he actually might end up?
Yeah, and I really appreciated your analysis. Well said. Yeah, I've been impressed with him in the Champions League. I mean, I've been impressed even more by Marquinhos, so I think it's been great. But that goes to show, I think Thiago Silva can be an excellent second center back on a top team, and on the right club, I think he can be that guide and even the best one, as long as he has a good supporting cast. So yeah, I've read the links to Chelsea, which makes sense to me. I think there is always that possibility that he stays at PSG, which he left the door open to. We know he would really like to go back to Milan, and it would be really interesting to see him at Milan, because if you think about it, the Milan we all grew up with and associated certain standards with in a lot of ways really ended when Thiago Silva and Ibrahimovic went to PSG. So in a kind of way, it would be kind of a signal to have them both at Milan. But Milan doesn't seem that eager to sign him. You know, they kept Kjaer, who was excellent, so maybe they see him as kind of the older center back to have on the squad. And we know they are very interested in Milenkovic, who is at Fiorentina, who is the other club in Serie A who has been heavily linked to Thiago Silva. They were really the first ones. They've been after him for a while. We know Rocco Commisso likes to make a splash. It worked out with Ribery. And I think you can make a case that Thiago Silva could be Ribery 2.0 as far as addition. And if you look at it from Fiorentina's perspective, if you can sell Milenkovic, who doesn't sound like he wants to extend his contract, which expires in 2022, sell him to Milan for a big profit, and then sign Thiago Silva to go with Pizzella. Not bad, if you ask me. That's a pretty nice scenario. So it looks like Thiago Silva would want Milan. Not so much reciprocal, at least so far. Let's see Fiorentina, PSG, and I'd be curious to see if more comes out from Chelsea. So another player, Alex, and I forgot to ask you this on Tuesday's show, that's been linked to Juve is Lacazette. We know getting that third attacker is one of the priorities for Juve. Sounds like they're ready to move on from Douglas Costa, keep Dybala kind of in that false nine, either a false nine role or play kind of a support. So say they bring in Lacazette, who has been, was one of the names linked at the striker position at Juve. Do you think he'd be able to help them? What's your impression of Lacazette since he's been in the Premier League?
Uneven. I really feel like I can give him an NA so far in his time in the Premier League, which shouldn't be because he's now been in the Premier League for a few seasons here. But he's just a player that still will have moments of brilliance and look like the Lacazette that was at Lyon, where a lot of top teams at the time when he was there were interested in him. But at Arsenal, I mean, it's clear who the more important player to Arsenal is between Lacazette and Aubameyang, and that's Aubameyang, of course. But there's still something there with Lacazette. He does have good moments of form, certainly. So at 29 years old, going to a team where they have a lot of things figured out and they would just love more goals from Lacazette, they'd love just some added quality and added push from the player, he could probably give that to them. I don't think he'd be going to a team necessarily where they're even going to need Lyon Lacazette. It's just, I don't know. When I think of players that I would acquire to put Juve over the hump, he just doesn't jump off the page to me because I see his move, as he could go there and have like 11 goals and 6 assists. That's pretty modest, but I'm just saying like 11 goals and 6 assists. I don't necessarily know if that makes Juve a lot better. It's just, I feel like they could find almost that in another player. So I don't know the financials of what they'd have to pay him, especially weekly and everything. I imagine it can't be that cheap, but still, I almost wonder if they could find what they would get in Lacazette in someone else in an easier solution. But I guess there is still upside because he still is 29. I'm not saying upside like he's all of a sudden going to find a new part to himself, but upside meaning, well, he's still kind of in his prime age range, and if you put him in a good situation, he can be a fairly top player for you. Not a top player, but he can be a top player for you. He can. So I can't think so tactically right now if Lacazette fits into what Pirlo wants to do, because I don't know what Pirlo wants to do. But yeah, I guess you could do worse, honestly. As you can hear, I'm very iffy on this, but I'm not against it, because you could do a lot worse than acquiring a 29-year-old player who might have a little chip on his shoulder, because he might feel like spare parts at Arsenal compared to someone like Aubameyang. But meh, the jury's out, I guess. I guess that's my answer. Could be good, but could not move the needle at all. So that's my opinion, David. And if you have anything to add, go for it. Otherwise, we can move on to hot transfer topics.
Yeah, let's move on to hot transfer topics because we're going to tie it up with this. I appreciate your perspective. I haven't followed him as much as you have, but yeah, my reaction is kind of the same. We know kind of Juve is always enamored with the French players. There's been a good track record there, but there's nothing at Arsenal that he did that really makes me think that he can move the needle.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I'm obviously quite plugged into what's going on in the Premier League, and even if you're at a lower club in the Premier League and you have like 15 goals, I'll take notice of you. So if you're doing something consistently, I'll pay attention. But Lacazette, for as long as he's now been with Arsenal, I just never, on a weekly basis, whether Chelsea were playing Arsenal or I just wanted Arsenal to lose against someone else, I never was like, I'm nervous about Lacazette today. So I don't know. Maybe that's a little telling. Let's move to this first hot transfer topic. David, beyond Lacazette, who is the favorite to be Juve's next striker?
Okay, so favorite, I still think it's Milik. So Milik has 1 year left on his deal at Napoli, won't extend. Look, Napoli's always going to ask for a big return. Juve's definitely going to want to include a player or two to make that happen. But to me, he's the favorite. Now, that doesn't mean he's the top choice, because Pirlo's top choice is Dzeko. Well, it's a little bit of an interesting choice. Now, I think Dzeko's a superb player. Thought he had a great season. He, when Roma does well, typically it's because Dzeko is doing his part. I think he's a great fit next to Ronaldo. I think this move is really to appease Ronaldo, because I think he'd work off really well off that type of center forward. But we know Andrea Agnelli had made the comment after the match against Lyon that Juve already had a very old squad. You have Ronaldo and Dzeko. That means two-thirds of your attackers are in their mid-30s. Not great there, but next season, if you told me, of all the names we've talked about, I think Dzeko's the best. And I think if Juve wants to go all in with Ronaldo next season, to me it kind of makes sense. But the problem is Roma doesn't want to sell Dzeko. He's one of the players that new owner Friedkin wants to build around. And unless Dzeko pushes to leave, they won't let him go to Juve. So let's see what happens. And interestingly, should Dzeko go to Juve, Roma would love to replace him with Milik, but Milik so far hasn't really opened the door to Roma. Look, he has a lot of leverage. He can sign with any club on a Bosman in February of next season. So let's see what happens. So I would say the favorite, still Milik, top choice, Dzeko, and it seems Lacazette is kind of the other option there as well.
Okay. All right, David. Well, how about this? This has turned into a little bit of a saga, you could say. Who would have thought that this player could have this story attached to him? Where do you think Gabriel will end up?
Yeah, he's definitely been a very popular name. You know, the center back market is always fascinating to me. It's really evolved in recent years, big prices and whatnot. And look, Napoli had reserved Gabriel for a while. We know they have a good relationship with Lille. They kept telling him, hold on, hang tight. We need to see what happens with Koulibaly. And once we know what happens with Koulibaly, if he stays, you can go elsewhere. If not, we're going to sign you. They have an agreement with everyone. Suspending Koulibaly, and by the way, as far as I know, he's only linked to Man City right now. But it sounds like Gabriel is getting a little tired of waiting. So I would say right now Arsenal's kind of in the lead. They have a very good offer to lead to Lille, 26 million plus 4 million in bonuses. Napoli's asking for a little bit more time. But I'm not sure if that Koulibaly thing is going to be resolved very soon. Interestingly, Di Marzio said that his feeling is that Koulibaly will leave. Obviously, he knows way more than me. I've been saying that this is the summer that it really wouldn't surprise me if he goes. So let's see what happens there. There's also been talk of Man United being linked to Gabriel kind of at the last second. I don't know. I could kind of see this theory, which also been floated by Indicalia, which is hilarious, but it's not the craziest theory in the world that maybe Man United are being used as a last second way to raise the wages for him. So let's see what happens. I would say right now, Arsenal in the lead. I do remain of the opinion that if something happens quickly with Koulibaly to Man City, then Napoli are the favorites, but Arsenal have certainly made a decent amount of progress.
Okay. I mean, he's a nice player. I've spoken about him on the podcast before. Can't say I've watched him for years and years. Very few have. But when you look at physical attributes and how he has performed recently in the last 18 months or so for Lille, nice player. Definitely a nice player. David, next one. What are the odds Zlatan extends his contract with Milan?
Yeah, I think it's almost certain. Look, you know, he's holding out for more money, and we talked about it on the pod that, you know, once Ragnic didn't come, it seems like Raiola's kind of becoming the point of reference at Milan. We know there's a lot of his players involved with Milan, both incoming and outgoing. But I do think Ibrahimovic will stay in the end. He's essentially asking to be the highest paid player on Milan. So he's looking to earn more than the 6 million after taxes Donnarumma earns. Is it that outrageous of a request? Probably not, because he really is in a lot of ways the most important in the short term player on Milan. We know the impact he's made. So I expect him to stay at Milan. What the final figure for the wages is up in the air. But I'd be really kind of shocked if he doesn't stay at Milan.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I definitely would like him to stay there. I think he should stay there for all parties. How about this, David? Could Sebastian Giovinco return to Italy?
So with the Euro coming a year late, I could see Giovinco wanting to come back to Italy. That would obviously increase his chances of making the team. I also were looking at Italy's squad. I think up front is one area where there is some uncertainty, so he could fit there well. The first team that has been linked to Giovinco was back in January, Parma, and their sporting director, Fagiano, is now at Genoa. Genoa is a club who has kind of a history of making these splashy moves. Last year, they surprised everyone by signing Schürrle after they had made the Champions League semifinal. So Giovinco would be an intriguing move there. I'm not sure Parma without sporting director Fagiano would be an option, but maybe if Gervinho leaves, and we know Kulusevski already left, maybe they want to make a splash there. And the other team that's been linked to Giovinco recently is Monza, which is Berlusconi and Galliani's club in Serie B. Now, I'm not sure if Giovinco would go to Serie B. I don't know how much that helps him making the Euro squad, although he'd be closer to home, closer to Mancini, who could watch. But Monza, to me, that seems more like a splashy link that won't go anywhere. If I had to put one team in Serie A, I would say Genoa, and maybe someone else jumps into the race.
Okay. All right. Well, David, where do you think Liverani will end up?
Liverani was the coach on Lecce, who I think impressed a lot of people. There was buzz that Liverani would stay in Serie B at Lecce, but they surprisingly parted ways recently. And I say it surprisingly now, but I always felt like Liverani belonged in Serie A. I actually think Cagliari, who went for Di Francesco, probably should have gambled on Liverani. And now there's buzz he could go to Genoa. Also linked to Parma, which is surprising that the Versa could leave. I think Liverani at Genoa would be intriguing. We know last year they had tried Andrea Zoli from Empoli. It didn't work out great. Kind of similar profiles, but I really like what I saw from Liverani. So I do hope he ends up staying in Serie A.
Okay. David, what will Giampaolo's Torino look like?
Yeah, you know, Torino's interesting to me because while most teams in Serie A are kind of going with continuity with the short turnaround to next season, and look, the retreats are already getting ready to start in next week, which is insane. A lot of teams going for continuity, not Torino. And they got last year, they had tried doing continuity. It didn't work out well. So they bring in Giampaolo, kind of surprising. There's been buzz that Biglia could join him at Torino. They already signed Ricardo Rodriguez. The two of his former players could join him there. Ricardo Rodriguez is an interesting signing. I'd say he was one of the most disappointing players that Mirabelli brought in at Milan. There was high buzz for him. It was interesting to me that Torino also extended Ansaldi's contract, and Giampaolo plays with that four-man defense. You know, they have two starting caliber left backs there, so that's interesting. The other player they are interested in is Barak, who had a really nice season at Lecce once he arrived in January. I do expect a lot of changes at Torino also, because I think quite a few players will leave. They had kind of lost motivation there after a bad season. So I think Torino will be one of the most active teams, both incoming and outgoing.
All right. David, last one of this segment. What signing surprised you the most so far this window?
So I would say Hakimi to Inter. How it happened, kind of a Chelsea swoop in out of the blue. Obviously, great signing for Inter. But the one that's coming that's really surprising to me is Cavani to Benfica, which sounds like will be completed right after the Champions League final. Benfica has been very aggressive. Di Marzio had an interesting profile on their sporting director. You know, they have a nice mix of young players, but they've also brought in Vertonghen. Cavani almost totally done. I'm really surprised by this. You know, we thought Cavani could first go to Atletico Madrid. Then he was linked to Inter. Had Lautaro left him going to Benfica. And it sounds like he's going to sign a 3-year deal contract with $10 million annual salary. Really surprising. I didn't expect that one. I have to say, Juve interested in Zeko. Maybe Cavani wouldn't have been the worst fallback plan on a Bosman, if you ask me. But good for Benfica. I enjoyed that profile. Di Marzio did. Certainly an intriguing club. So before we get to Fulvio Santucci on Inter, which will be available to everyone, we have a part of the podcast just for patrons. We have a ton of great stuff. We're moving more and more content to Patreon. The reason we do that is I don't personally make a penny off Patreon, but we use it to support a great charity. We use it to cover our production costs. We use it to pay our freelance writers. We have some excellent articles. We had Enrico Passarella this week. We have Chris Winterburn. We have others as well. And I have my transfer rumor raider column on Saturday mornings come out there. You can get them as a patron. You can get a longer version of our shows. You get really a lot of extra content with that, plus a bonus interview. We had another half hour with Enrico Passarella on this week. Okay, so it's been way too long since we spoke about Inter on the podcast. We try to do all the teams and not wait too long to get to them, but between the Juve manager change, we kind of have to cover that, but I'm going to make it up to you because I have a great first-time guest to cover Inter. I've been wanting to have Fulvio Santucci, who is based in Milano, on the show for a long time. So since we wanted to do a really fun deep dive on Inter, today's the day for his debut. Just note, Fulvio and I are recording this on Wednesday. You will hear this on Friday. I have a feeling a decent amount of you people will hear this after the Europa League final, but this interview is really more in general about Inter. So Fulvio, I've been following him for a really long time. He's one of the people that I enjoy following the most. He's definitely passionate about Inter, but also very, very objective. I really like his takes. He also has a Twitch channel, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. I also really like he does a lot of stuff covering Inter during matches. So Fulvio, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Calcioland. Benvenuto.
Hello, David. Thank you very much. And great to be here.
Awesome. So it's been a lot of fun getting to know you real fast before the show. I've heard Fulvio on Sempre Inter with our friend Nima. So I'm looking forward to chatting with you about Inter. So let's start here, Fulvio. Let's take the Europa League off the table. Just tell me your opinion, if you want. Give me a grade on Inter's campaign in Serie A. They end up finishing just 1 point behind Juve in second place. So what grade would you give Inter just on what they did in Serie A?
I would say on a scale 1 to 10, I would assign a 7.
Okay.
And I mean, it's a bit low, or it's a bit low according to the other people, the other supporters of Inter throughout Italy. But I'm very convinced, and I'm still convinced right now, that Inter could have been pointed at a big target this year.
Yeah.
And just because Juventus was not the same Juventus.
Mm-hmm.
And practically, if you take a look at the standings, you can see Inter that has better number than Juventus practically everywhere.
A less number of
losses, a higher number of goals scored, a less number, a minor number of goals conceded. So this with the defense is the data that I regret the most, because normally when you are in Serie A and you have the best defense,
yeah,
when you concede the least goals, normally you end up winning Scudetto. And this was not the case. So it's a bit regrettable. It's been a very weird season. So the big start, then the injury, especially in the midfield for Inter, Sensi, Barella, and so on and so forth. Then the COVID stop, and when you came back from this stop, you don't know how you end up with the other teams. So I think it's acceptable, because it's a second spot in Serie A. It's a record of the last 10 years. But on another perspective, Inter could have been better than this.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of looking at it. Because I think, you know, at the beginning of the season, had you said Inter will finish 1 point behind Juve, you would probably have taken that as a great season. But then you look at how weak Juve was, and Inter lost to them both times. I think that's a very fair way of looking at it. So, I mentioned you're passionate, but also objective, and that's why you're here today. So let's talk about the Europa League. And again, we're recording this before the final. Inter's been definitely impressive. So tell me, were you surprised by how well Inter have done in this kind of weird new phase of the Europa League?
A bit, I have to say, a bit. A bit surprised, or at least that the things went exactly how I wished. I was surprised. Probably on the perspective of the final reached, the big obstacle was the Getafe at the first round.
Yeah.
Because I suppose that that victory against Getafe unleashed the mentality of Inter, and the matches against Bayer Leverkusen, especially Shakhtar Donetsk, went better, went very well. I'm not surprised probably by the run a bit. I am, but not by the run, but by the approach to the games that Inter had, especially that one with the Shakhtar. We were talking about a European semifinal, which was practically the most important game that Inter had in the last 10 years. And these players played this game just like it was a Wednesday friendly, right? Very calm, very confident, prepared the tactics perfectly. So that was the really surprise for me. Inter was practically an unreliable team so far for the last years. But if you watch that team against Shakhtar, you have the impression that this team was completely used to this kind of game. And it was not like that. So that was the big surprise for me.
Yeah, I totally agree on the Getafe point. That's really well said. So now let's talk about some individual players on Inter. I picked a few that are currently on the team, and then we'll get to Hakimi, of course. So let's talk about Lukaku, which I have to say, he's one of my favorite new figures in Serie A. And I say figures because it's not just what he does on the pitch, which is fantastic. I just love his personality. I love what he's brought to the league on and off the pitch. So, tell me a little bit, as someone who follows Inter really, really closely, what's it been like to go from Mauro Icardi to Lukaku as your main striker?
Well, a huge change, I have to say. A very huge switch. And 1 year later, we can, talk about this and judge this as a good move that Marotta made back in the days. So it was practically overall an improvement overall, both in the field and off the field. If we talk about the field, we can see that the numbers told the story about the first season of Romelu Lukaku, 32 goals in all competition. That is an incredible amount of goals, to be honest, and I did not expect that. But also, if you see the games, you can see that Lukaku is the reliable solution that Inter has when the game plan is not going how Inter wished. So it's like a sort of plan B that always works, Lukaku. And you can see by Andanovic, when Andanovic build the play, and it's struggling to build the play with the closest player, always gets you Lukaku to have a chance for Lukaku to just, control the ball and keep the ball and just to free up the players on the field. So that is the most the improvement that I can see the most, right? That Inter with Lukaku always have a plan B. With Icardi was not the same, right? Simply speaking, Lukaku, with Icardi, you need to build a team around Icardi. And on the other hand, if you have Lukaku, it's Lukaku that builds the team around him. So that's practically the difference. And off the field, I have the impression that this player improves anyone that is around him. So if you think about Lautaro has a great season. For the first half, then he struggled a bit, especially after the post lockdown. But if you see Lautaro right now, if you see Lautaro last year, Lautaro has improved a lot. And I can guess that this improvement is especially due to Romelu Lukaku near to him.
Yeah, well said. So let's get to Lautaro now. I was joking that Barcelona is so bad that maybe he's no longer distracted by the transfer rumors to them. As you mentioned, he's struggled a bit for a while, and now he's looked really good, especially in the last match. So let me ask you, is there a certain figure in Euros, like 70, 80, or maybe the full exit clause, where you would consider moving Lautaro as a move, or based on his age and the fact that he can probably get better and how well he plays with Lukaku, that you absolutely want to keep him on the team?
It's a very tough scenario to think about, to be honest.
Yeah.
Um, Yeah, if you ask me, there's not a real figure in which Lautaro is sold in this year. I mean, just for the session, because the session is particular. This transfer market session is particular. You have the leagues that are beginning and starting in different time, and players that are transferring while the other competition are ahead. It's not the session to try something like that for me. And Marotta knows about that and knew some months ago. He said that in a political way, of course, but the message was that it's good for Lautaro to stay here 1 year, but it's also good for us. It's good for Inter that Lautaro stays here 1 year. For the moment, it's difficult to have to receive an offer adequate to his value. It's very difficult for me because Barcelona, if you ask me, is out of the game about this.
Yeah.
And we know why. We all know why, because we all watch football. So it's difficult. It's difficult to find a scenario in which you can have a fair move like Lautaro is paid with a fair amount of money, and you can find a substitute that is fair enough to replace Lautaro. So it's not my game plan for this year.
Okay.
The next year is likely because Lautaro can do a lot of improvement here. He needs to improve something, especially mentally speaking. He needs to improve something before being in the the bottom line is that he's not a champion, but he could become a champion. So if he stay here 1 year, he improve his chances to become a great player, and Inter improve the chances to sold this player with a fair amount of money, with a fair value. This year is difficult.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a very odd market, to say the least. So let's talk about De Vrij, because, you know, in my opinion, probably especially at the beginning of the season, when people look at Inter's defense, there was Skriniar, and we'll get to him because I have another question on him. Skriniar, who was kind of the star. There was the big move of Diego Godin coming on a Bosman. Of course, he's been one of the best defenders in the world. But in my opinion, always the best one that Inter had was De Vrij. And I think this season he really showed even more how great he is. I mean, he's really perfect for Conte's formation. So let me ask you, is there any center back in Serie A you would swap with De Vrij, or do you think he's kind of the standard right now?
Not with the system. If Inter keep continuing to have the system of three central backs, I think De Vrij is the best option that we have. If we need to switch to the two C central back, the things can change. But I'm not convinced that we are going this way. I think we are going to maintain the system with the three central backs. And I think that De Vrij is the most reliable, the best choice that you can have in Serie A right now on this kind of system.
Yeah, I agree. He is really tailor-made for that. So let's talk a little bit about Skriniar, because he's been an interesting case. You know, every year I write a column on who is the most valuable player transfer fee-wise at Serie A. And just last year, Skriniar was in my top five. I mean, I considered him an absolute beast, but he struggled a little bit in Conte's system, and recently he's on the bench a lot. So, especially with Lautaro almost certainly staying, would you consider selling Skriniar, or do you think he needs more time to adapt to Conte, or maybe you see it that Skriniar should stay at Inter longer than Conte will? So, what's your take on his situation?
Well, I have to say that I believe a lot in this player, and I think that the player that we watched this year is not the potential of him. I think that the problem with Skriniar now is very clear to me, and the problem is similar to that one that happened to Godin. Now Godin is recovering from that, but the problem is that he needs to cover a lot of field. You need to cover a lot of zones, and especially the defense is very high. So he's okay on the one versus one. He's probably one of the best right now in the Europe. on the one yeah. versus one. But to do that, you need to keep the defense a little bit low, right? Not so high. When you run so high, you need to run behind the player, and you cannot wait the player from the 1-on-1. So that was the problem with Skriniar, in my opinion. I think that he can adapt to the new setup. And I think, by the way, that the new setup is better to the overall style of play of Inter. I think that if there's a swap deal, so not the deal that is concerned him, but if that's a swap deal that can bring in a player that Inter needs, like, I don't know, we were talking about Dombele back in the last week. That could be a good move, but only in a swap deal, because in a swap deal, you can actually have the best amount of money that you can have. Right? If you sell Skriniar just by itself, I'm not convinced that you have a fair offer in your hand. My wish is that Skriniar will stay, because I think that he can do a lot better than this. But if you have a swap deal in which fix some problem, some lack that we have in other zone of the field, like the midfield, I would consider that, actually. I would consider that, because the defense for Inter is good. You have De Frey, you have Bastoni, great revelation of the year. You have Godin that is coming back. Then you always have D'Ambrosio, which always be reliable for a lot of roles. And perhaps you're going to have Kumbulla.
Kumbulla, yeah.
The Verona youngster. So the defense is probably the zone of the field in which Inter is better right now.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal to sacrifice one player from that zone of the field. But you should be sure that you're gonna gain from this deal, and that's why I'm considering a swap deal, but not a deal that does involve a swap with another player.
Yeah, I have to say, if you told me you move Skriniar in a good deal and you bring in Kumbulla to replace him, that to me, that sounds pretty good. Kumbulla's younger. He's used to that type of formation. I think he was really excellent last season. And look, I get it that Inter fans, for good reason, have a lot of affection for Skriniar. But I agree
yeah,
with you.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. I have a lot of affection for him, so it's... It won't be easy to consider this kind of scenario, but for the greater good, I think that would be something to consider.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about Barella, who I think, other than Lukaku, has maybe been the superstar kind of this Europa League run. So I have to say, in the first half of the season, I feel like Sensi was getting a lot more attention, and he was great, but he just can't stay healthy. And I think Barella was always very consistent, but now he's really elevated his game. So tell me a little bit, what's your impression of Barella? Did you expect him to be quite this good in his first season at Inter?
Well, a stunning player, to be honest. And I was not the best believer of this. I did not believe so much in this player at the first. I mean, I knew that he was a great prospect. But it costed a lot, like 50 million euro, which for a defensive midfielder was, an important deal. I was not convinced about that, but I have to say that he grew up a lot in during this first season. He talked about that. He talked about the importance of Conte around him. And I think that it's the Conte style of play that made Barella in the best condition to become this kind of player, right? If you think about the style of play of Conte, it's demanding, like physically demanding, and you have to run a lot. And if you don't run a lot, you don't have so much chances to win games with the style of play. So Barella understands that, and practically is the one that runs for everyone into the midfield, and I think that's why he's shining so good into the Europa League, because in Europa League It's not like Serie A. In Serie A, you can just win games by tactics. But when you come to the European games, it's all about the pace. It's all about the rhythm that you go, in which you approach the game, right? You need to run a lot. You need to be consistent. You need to take a lot. You need to be everywhere in the field, practically. You need to eat the field. You need to eat the grass. And Barella is exactly doing like that. I think, on the other hand, that what is becoming Barella is the perfect Inter player, right? Because historically speaking, supporters of Inter tend to give a lot of affection of player like this. So runs a lot, always consistent in the game, always visible in the game, the last one to give up. So it's a perfect match for Inter, especially for this reason, because it's really the last one to give up. And historically speaking, this fan base of Inter always loved this kind of player.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned Conte, and, you know, in some ways he's a little bit reminiscent of Vidal when he first broke out at Juve with the running and all, maybe not the scoring quite yet, but absolutely. I agree. He's really something. I'm very, very impressed with him. So now let's talk about one player who's already at Inter and who will arrive, obviously, next season, and one who's likely to join Inter. So let's start with Hakimi. I think this is one transfer move where even people that don't follow Serie A that much were really, really impressed. Inter swooped in, gets a player that's done really, really well on the biggest stage. Really young, a position where it's really hard to find good players and someone perfect for Conte. So tell me a little bit about Hakimi, because I know one thing that I like about you, Fulvio, is you follow a lot of leagues. I know you follow the German league quite a bit. So tell me a little bit about Hakimi and how excited you are to see him at Inter.
A lot. A lot, I have to say, because come to think about, I think that him in that zone of the field was the overall best choice, right? The number one pick on this zone of the field during this transfer session, and I was not convinced that it could be possible, right? I was convinced that he went to Manchester City or other kind of big teams, other kind of superpower, European football superpower. So I was not convinced about that. It's a great deal. It's a great deal. It's a very fast player. It's consistent. It's always going to do the right choice when it comes to the goal zone, right assist, shots, goal, dribbles. Then let's not forget that it's a Moroccan player on the paper, but he's grown up in the Real Madrid. And when you grow up in the Real Madrid, one thing that you have for sure is that you know how to use your feet, right? So it has a great touch. It's a great touch, and I'm a bit surprised that Real Madrid let him go so easily. But on the other hand, I understood the reason of the Merengues, because you know they had Carvajal there, that is a Spanish player, so very you know the fan base is. I have a lot of affection for this player, and they receive a fair value on this player. But for Inter, it's a great addiction. It's a great addiction because everybody was able to understand that for Conte, the winger is something that is crucial for the system. And of course, you cannot afford to play in that position with Candreva 1 year again. Candreva is 33 this year, I think. And aim to the big target like Scudetto or like other targets. You cannot do like that. So when you choose Hakimi, you give a great signal, right? We want to fill the gap. We want to win.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And you mentioned why Real Madrid would sell him. A good point on Carvajal. Also, as you mentioned at the top, it's just a weird market, and big teams, you know, who especially those that ask their players to take pay cuts, are going to have to make some sacrifices. So, good for Inter, and I agree. Really, a great move. And another one that looks really quite likely is Sandro Tonali. So we have another promising Italian midfielder after Cinzia and Barella on the verge of joining Inter. So tell me a little bit, how do you envision Tonali fitting in at Inter if he arrives?
Well, I'm a great fan of Tonali, to be honest. But apart from that, I think that his role is probably the worst luck that Inter had this season. Because in this final run of the season, Inter is forced to play with Gagliardini, which is reliable right now, but it's at a lot of limits, right? But he's the only one that can actually fit that kind of play, and he's the only one that can make Conte satisfied and keep the balance. So Tonali is a player that can fill that gap. But the question that everyone is making right now, what is wondering, that the fans are wondering, is he ready for this? I mean, he practically has only 1 year of Serie A, and playing to a team that was practically relegated on the early spring. So it's difficult to understand if he's able to do this this improvement, to do this this great jump from Brescia to Inter, and be lined up into the ideal lineup of the Inter of next season at the beginning. I think it's difficult to do that, but to some extent it's similar to what we told about Barella on the 1 year ago, right? He's coming. Yeah. He's coming from Cagliari. He had just 2 years of Serie A. Probably not. It's impressive, yes, but 50 million. I don't know. 50 million. You need to line up in, and he ended up to be one of the best players of the season. So let's hope that Tonali is the same here. But probably it's not the only one midfield that Inter needs, right? I think that Inter needs a midfielder that is ready to go right now. Tonali, of course, is the future, and he can become a great midfielder, right? To face it, both offensive and defensive, able to tackle, able to run, able to pass the ball. Did not score so much this year, but he can do a lot better than this. So for the future, it's a great deal, and I'm perfectly aware about that. I tweeted last winter about Kulusevski. When Kulusevski went to Juventus, I said, I hope that now that Kulusevski made his way to Juventus, I hope that Inter go on Tonali, because it's the same investment, right? Young player, one of the best into the Serie A, not the same position, but still a position that Inter needs. And yeah. So I think that I'm saddled with that, because Tonali is making a reality. But I just hope that for the next year, it's not the midfield restyling. It's not won't be just about Tonali, because I think we need a bit more, at least for the immediate games of the next year. Then Tonali can be a great addition into the future.
Awesome. Well, Fulvio, this was really, really awesome. I have to say your English is really, really good, but I know you do some things in Italian, and we do have some listeners in Italy, and we have a lot of listeners that are learning Italian. And I think your content is actually good for them to sing their teeth in. So tell us a little bit what you do on Twitch, where people can hear you in Italian. Again, fine. A lot of our listeners are trying to get better there. So just let us know where they can find you.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yes. If you are learning Italian, you probably can start from the writing. So if you want to read me, you can find me on my personal account, twitter.com/SantucciFulvio. But if you are advanced with Italian and you want to hear about that, I can provide live coverages of the Inter games on the Twitch platform. And you can find us on the twitch.tv/InterSupportersTV.
Awesome. Fulvio, I can't thank you enough. I had a great time. I learned quite a bit. You've been a fantastic first guest, so I look forward to chatting with you again in the coming months. And thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here, and I hope to be back very soon.